You're listening to WWBC, Cocoa, Merritt Island, Melbourne, the Titusville and the Beaches, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Vieira, 94.7 FM, and W264AS, Melbourne and Palm Bay, 100.7 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Biggie on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends here on WWBC AM 1510 here in Cocoa, Florida, as well as FM 94.7, FM 99.9, and FM 100.7. We have an action-packed show today here in our studio. We've got four awesome ladies, and we're going to be joined by Dr. Lulu on the phone in a little bit. So let's introduce our guests before we go on to chatting about a few kitchen table topics and the wall and certain things that is not happening right now. We've got Joe Shim, who's Joe's my friend. We're also sisters in the League of Women Voters.
We are.
And she's married to a fella from the Caribbean. So I always feel like we're close with the curry chicken and all that.
Right.
We share common food. We share common food and common folks. Yeah. And you're from England.
Yes.
And we both had the British system in schooling, so that's kind of neat. And then we have on the second mic, we have Sonia Mallard. Sonia is my friend, and she looks out for me, and she's my soul sister. I look out for her as well. Thank you for all that you do at the Moore Center. And she also has a radio program here in the same station, but another studio right across the hall. So thank you for being here.
You're welcome.
And then we have Ellen, who is the brains behind the operation that helps me with the show and co-hosting and all the good stuff, sending out the invoices and keeping me in check.
There we go.
Thank you, Miss Ellen, for being here.
And more downloads and more podcasts happen this week for the show. So hopefully everybody's tuning in to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends and also on SitaMediaInc.com.
And you're getting all those emails when people wish to come on the show and be part of this fun, unscripted, educational, and quite informative show. And they're all asking me for stats. Everybody wants stats, like how many people are listening and how many downloads are you getting? And then I forward that to Ellen.
Yep. And of course, it's live radio, so it's a little hard to track, but we do our best to make sure that everything is pretty accurate.
But we do appreciate everyone that's supporting the show. We have some really great sponsors. And we just picked up Dr. Lulu, who's going to be sponsoring a segment every month. And we're going to be talking about teens, depression, suicides. Maybe we'll talk about obesity, all the things, technology, how it affects our kids and their brains, all kind of stuff we're going to be talking about. And Ellen, we just want to give a shout out today for our sponsors. We've got our four great sponsors that renewed their commitment to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Correct. And MedFast.
Right.
Dixie Crossroads, Jock Coff and Associates, and Cloud9 Sleep Shop.
Right. And we also want to remind our audience about the upcoming event with the Brevard Walk of Fame that's happening on Saturday, February 23rd. At the Oasis at the Palms. That's right here at the Space Coast Association of Realtors. And the tickets are still available online. Just go to Echo Connects and you can get a ticket. And I just want to say...
And congratulations, Sita,
yes,
for being nominated.
Yeah, I'm so excited.
Yeah.
I'm nominated.
You are nominated. I think it's... I'm not sure if it's Citizen for them. Citizen of the Year, Volunteer of the Year. I forget which one because I think Stanley Briz was voted the Citizen of the Year.
Right. Well, volunteer, you know what? It's just nice.
Just nice that you get recognized.
Yeah. I mean, you know, when you work full time and run for office and have a radio show and is a wife and a mother and a grandmother and a friend, a neighbor, and you're doing the best you can because, you know, all of us, we talk about life and we talk about the value of our life and other people's lives as well. And I'm one of those people that put value in every single human being. It's nice when you go out and you give your best to the community. And oftentimes we have to leave our husbands at home, our children, and go out there and try to help find solutions for people who are homeless or people who have HIV and AIDS, which we'll be talking about in a little bit, or people who have health care, affordable housing.
And we joined a fight for public education because we believe that every child is entitled to an education and an opportunity. And people like me, we're called activists. We don't get paid. We just give our time.
That's right.
But you know what? It's the love of activism. I mean, Gandhi was an activist. Mm-hmm. Dr. Martin Luther King was an activist. So many people that I look up to, Desmond Tutu, all these people, they're activists. Mm-hmm. And what exactly is an activist? It's a person that recognizes that there are things to be done on earth, right?
That's right.
And you do it. You just jump in and you do it. You find like-minded groups and like-minded causes, and you do it from your heart. And I always say, if you do things from your heart, you really don't have to think about offending people, because all our hearts are pure and all of us mean well. Right? And I see Sonia shaking her head. It's true, because freedom of speech comes with a responsibility to be nice.
Absolutely.
Sometimes it's not what you say, it's how you say it.
That's right.
Right? And sometimes you know, somebody said to me this morning at the gym, we were talking about politics, and a friend of mine said, every single human being who ran for office and is sitting in the Congress of the United States and does not want to meet face to face with the other side and compromise and find common ground should not run again. And I agree with that wholeheartedly, 100%. Why run if you're going to be there just for your own team? It's not like that.
And we're never going to get anything done unless we find the common ground.
Right. Really. And like Joe was saying earlier, there is common ground in so many things, that if it's just how you talk to people. Right.
And it's that saying, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. Mm-hmm. So it's about serving and caring for our communities. What's going to happen to us?
Yeah. I mean, if everybody want to be selfish and greedy and just think about their own bank account and their own generation to come and their own children and forget about everybody else, then what's the use? We all hear about the human tribe. We are social creatures, believe it or not, right?
That's right.
We are. Mm-hmm. We like being part of something big, right? So on the phone, we have calling in is our friend Dr. Lulu, and she's calling in from... Hi! Are you calling in from Texas? Tennessee or Texas?
Hi, Peter.
Hi!
Texas.
So we're so glad that you're going to be a recurring guest on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And I wanted to introduce you to our friends today. We have Jo Shim here. She's with the League of Women Voters. And then we have Sonia Millard.
Hi, how are you?
And of course, Ellen. Hi. And we're so excited that you're taking the time away from your busy practice and all the things that you're doing to call in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends and talk a little bit about what you are doing. So tell our listeners here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends a little bit about yourself.
Well, I thought we did this before, Sita.
The thing is, you still have to do it, because we are finding out.
We get a new audience every
week. Yeah, we're finding out that we have people tuning in to us in Sweden and India.
Oh, wow.
And we actually have messages coming in on Facebook from people that we don't even know that are picking up the stations. So, I mean, I could tell them
No, I'm very capable of doing it myself. I was just messing with you.
You're messing with me.
Yes. We have to start on a light note, because we talk about heavy stuff on your show.
Yeah, we
very
do.
Heavy stuff. So throw in all the lightness that we can get, you know, we just have to. We have to. So my name is Dr. Lulu. Yes, that's who I am. I am a mometrician, which basically is a pediatrician and a mom. So I'm a mometrician with coming on 3 decades now of clinical experience doing this stuff, taking care of babies and teenagers and young adults, giving them shots, making sure that they're well and they're going off to college healthy, you know, and all of that, talking to their parents and teens and all that. So I about 4 months ago, did a little bit of a pivot from full-time clinical practice into, I guess I heard it's talking about activism, so into my own form of activism, talking about, basically speaking about depression and suicide in teenagers and young adults and really children, period. So that's what I do now, and it's funny. I was talking yesterday on my Facebook Live, and I know you were on. I was like, I feel like I just came in at the right time, because every single day we look at the news on social media, another one, another teenager, another child, you know, and
taking
their life for, you know, all kinds of crazy stuff is going on now. So I'm really excited to have listened and heard the call, and you know, and kind of said, okay, send me, Lord.
Yeah, and you know what's amazing about you, you know, your life, when we look at your bio, you went to school in Nigeria, immigrated to the United States, and you're giving back so much. And when I think of you, I think of what immigrants are giving back to this, to the United States, and how blessed we are to be in this country that we could do this, because your voice is heard not just here in the U.S., but all over the world. I mean, I just read something this morning from a physician in Trinidad and Tobago, where a woman was diagnosed with colon cancer at the age of 52, and she basically said to the physician, "How can I end my life today?" And the doctor said, "You don't have to end your life. We will do this together." And she just tagged me in that post. So I mean, it is a topic that affects. It is something that affects people, young and old. And I'm not sure. You know, collectively as human beings, we have to hold people's hands and help them and try to help with the stigma and the shame of depression and suicides and what's going on. So I'm glad that we're doing a show like this. When you get a chance, you'll see that post on my Facebook that I shared this morning from Dr. Shireen Kalu in Trinidad. But so tell us a little
bit. Actually, I'm glad you said that. I was just going to say that. I'm glad you said that. But just to go back to saying about what you said about foreigners and immigrants and the things that we're doing with the current political climate, you would never believe that, you know, immigrants had anything positive to add to the pot of soup. So I'm really happy that you're saying that. Your voice, my voice, voices with the unique accents. This is what it's about. We there are many of us that are good out there. We're doing good things. We're doing things bigly, if I may borrow his vocabulary. But indeed, you know, there are some of us out there that are trying to, you know, do the right thing. But if you listen to the political climate, you would never believe that there's anything good coming from the immigrant nation. So yes, I'm all for let's put our voices together, and then together we'll scream a louder, make a much more joyful, louder sound, and drown all of this negative.
And you know, as we get older too, you know, we all get away from so many things. Like in, you know, your 20s, you're soaring; in your 30s, you're flying. In your 40s, man, you're just making money and things are great. Children are going off to college and whatever. In your 50s, you're kind of coming down and spirituality starts kicking in. Mm-hmm. And you start asking yourself, what is my purpose on earth? And of course, we want to make money. We want to have a profession and we want to make sure our children are successful in whatever profession or trade or creative ability they have. But there's something about the connection between human beings on the earth and what we can do to make other people's lives a little bit happier on this planet. And when I see you on Facebook and what you're doing, you always talk about the children. You always talk about their mind and what's going on. And I could feel your pain when a child commits suicide. I saw that 9-year-old child was bullied, and I saw you posted it on Facebook. And I thought, how that mom feels to come home and find her child just committed suicide in the closet in her home. You know, so yeah, those are the things that hurts. And I think not just here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, but people all over the world should start looking at these things. It is not okay to bully someone. It's not okay to tease someone. And it's not okay to belittle someone's child. And it sometimes I think the parents at home bear responsibility for what they say at home too. What do you think about parents talking to their children about issues like this?
But that's exactly what my most recent blog post, the one from Friday. I told my mom, I said, I just woke up at Friday morning at 5:30 in the morning, and all the words just kept coming to me. I think the main thing is, parents, we all have to accept that everybody's child is not going to be the victim. There is a parent out there that your child is the bully. And that's why that blog said, is your child the bully? Is your child the bully? We cannot all just pretend that, oh yeah, my child is a victim, or even worse, my child is a bystander. Those bullies have parents. And those parents, do they even know that their kid is a bully? My baby son was a bully. He was a bully in school. We found out the hard way, but we took action right away, nipped it in the bud, and I was like, okay, boom, we can't do that. We'll not tolerate this. Parents have to be open-minded to the fact that your child might be the bully, and it's scary, but you don't want to be the parent whose child is responsible. You don't want to be the parent whose child is responsible for another child taking their own life. A 9-year-old who is being told by other 9-year-olds, go kill yourself, you're a bitch, all those crazy words, just kill yourself, just die now. Another 9-year-old is telling her that, and all you've got to do is just tell them long enough And they're going to start thinking about it. They're going to start saying, you know what? Maybe I should kill myself. I don't know if all the kids even understand the fact that it's permanent. You know, I don't know yet. That's the part that I don't get yet. But the meanness is too much. It's just too much.
And so, doctor,
you have to talk to your kids.
You've seen this on your practice as well when you speak to children. I mean, you're a pediatrician. That's your specialty, speaking to mothers and children. I mean, I'm sure you've seen this a lot in your practice as well. This is why you became an activist for such a cause.
I've seen it at home. I've seen it at school. I've seen it at work. I've seen it everywhere. The other day I was minding my business and one of the little boys came to play with my son. And my son was like, give me a minute, let me finish my homework. I was just sitting down reading a book. And then the boy said, well, if you don't come to play with me, you're gay. That's exactly what he said. I'm like, what? What did I just hear? I'm like, what? So I went out and I said, come here, let's have a little chit-chat. What did you just say? And right there, we had a little chit-chat. I said, look, I am a part of the village it takes to raise this child. I cannot hear him say that and just be okay. And my son was like, oh, mom, it's okay. No, it's not okay. It's not okay because my son, you might be okay with it. Somebody else might not. The next person might not be okay with it. We cannot allow. He's 14 years old. You cannot go around saying because somebody told you that they have to do their homework. So give him a minute to finish his homework, and then you tell him, oh, if you don't come to play with me, you're gay. What does it even mean?
Right.
Actually, it's a thing that the teenagers do.
Very judgmental. Yeah, he's just judging.
Very beyond.
Yeah.
Yes. What has being gay got to do with homework, got to do with not coming to play with you? It just didn't make any sense. Right there, I nipped it in the bud. And when I was done talking with him, we gave a high five to each other and a fist bump. And I said, go about your way, and I go about my way. And then next time I saw him, I asked him, I said, have you been good? He said, yes, ma'am, I did this, I did that. I said, okay, very good. And now we're like buddies. But I needed to get into his mind to find out why he said that. So it's just a thing. He didn't really mean it. Do you realize that there are people out there that might believe what you're saying and take it to heart? You can't just because you don't mean, you can't say stuff like that.
Well, words do matter, right?
Oh.
And Sonia is shaking her head. We see that from the top to the bottom. Words do matter.
And words matter so much, Dr. Lulu, that was a form of verbal bullying. That's how they try to become these bullying. They start verbally, and then it becomes more aggressive, and then they do physical bullying. But I'm glad you nipped that in the bud because that was the verbal, and that's good that you recognize the sign.
So, Dr. Lulu, what other signs do you think parents might be missing if there's a bullying situation?
What are the signs that parents are missing?
Yes. If you have a child and you think everything's fine, are there things to look for that you might be missing?
Okay, so you're talking about if your child is being bullied or if your child is the bully. I'm trying to...
But both, really.
Okay, well, first of all, if your child is being bullied, we'll go from there. In other words, if your child is the victim, the truth is, in the kind of world that we live now, we're always on the go. Eat fast food, get in the car, I'm on my phone. You're right, we might never even notice anything. We might miss it completely. But if you pay attention, so the first thing you want to do is watch his or her mannerisms. A lot of times it changes. If you know your kid used to be very outgoing, used to love to go to play ball with his friends, as an example, or her friends, whatever, and all of a sudden she doesn't want to go play anymore. Wait, I thought Mandy was your friend. No, not really. I don't know. I don't really want to hang out with her. Okay, what's going on? Let's talk about it. Okay, that's one. The other thing is your child could come home with scratches and bruises, just random scratches and bruises. A lot of kids are being bullied on the school bus. They are being beaten up on the school bus. The little 10-year-old who just committed suicide last week, he was bullied on the school. He was choked on the school bus. So your kid can come in with bruises, but you have to be looking at your child's body to notice that. Okay, that's another one. Your child could come in hungry all the time. If your child is normally not hungry, and then they always come up hungry, maybe somebody's eating their lunch. How do I know this? Because my son took somebody's lunch. Now, he didn't need that lunch. He had his own lunch, but he took somebody else's lunch. And that person was hungry and told the teacher. That's how we found out that he was taking people's lunch. Well, he only did it once. But the point is, your son could be coming home from school hungry when he normally is not hungry. You know what I mean? Like, what happened to your lunch? Why didn't you eat your lunch? Is somebody taking your lunch? That's another thing. But I think the main thing is their demeanor will change. Your usually outgoing child suddenly changes and becomes
withdrawn. They become more withdrawn. Yeah. and also, doctor, you know, some children are bullied in the school at the table that they're eating on. It happens in the lunchroom.
That's right.
Like the people are picking on them
everywhere.
At that exact table, and they don't want to sit with them. And that, to me, I think the teachers at some point need to intervene when you see a child by themselves eating with a book or something in their hand, but no one speaking to them.
So what happened was, I'm glad you brought that up, because the last time I went to my middle school, my last son's school for their career day, what I did was I took the permission to just do 5 minutes of what I do, and the remaining 25 minutes I talked to them about bullying. And at the end of the session, I empowered each one. I challenged them. I said, go to lunch today. When you go to lunch today, find someone who's sitting by themselves and go sit with them. Don't say anything. Just go sit with them. And then the next day, go sit with them. And the day after that, go with your friend and go sit with them. You will see that by the third or fourth time, that person is going to start opening up and start warming up to you, because you never know what people are dealing with. Nobody knows. A lot of ostracism, which I know we talked about verbal bullying, but ostracization is even worse, especially amongst girls. We're not speaking to you anymore. We're not playing with you anymore. You're no longer in our clique. And they will, you're right, they'll leave them and they'll be alone at the table. So I said, find someone who's sitting alone on the table. Just go sit and eat your lunch. Don't say anything. And then before you know it, by the third or fourth time, those barriers will be broken. And before you know it, they will be the ones speaking to you or whatever. But you make a new friend, and then you might even help someone.
Right. And it seems as though the bullying leads to depression, which then leads to what you've been talking about, which is suicides. So what should someone do if someone tells them that they're thinking about taking their own life?
I think the first thing and the most important thing of all is believe them. I think a lot of times the reason people don't talk is because they feel like, well, if I say something, no one is going to believe me. Hush, child, be quiet. You don't really mean it. You're not really going to kill yourself for that boy. He's not even worth it. Or what do you mean you're going to kill yourself? You have all these clothes or all these shoes or whatever. You know, so the most important thing is first and foremost, believe them, and then show empathy and compassion. Because the truth is, most times if a child, even they don't even tell you, if they make the mistake of telling you and you kind of push it aside, they will never come back to you. Teenagers already don't want to talk about it. So if they come to tell you that, ma'am or dad or whatever, I just want to die. And sometimes they might not even say it out. They might start talking about death, or asking about people that died, or just giving away their stuff. I had a friend whose son was supposed to be in a competition. He canceled the competition, and he put it on Snapchat. Y'all don't have to worry about me anymore because I won't be here on Monday. Things like that. He didn't tell his mother. Luckily for her, somebody came around and told her, this is what your son is posting. He canceled his competition. She knows he loves to wrestle, and he canceled his wrestling competition. He was trying to commit suicide. So yes, the truth is, first believe them and then offer them help right now. If you're not a doctor, if you're not a nurse, it doesn't matter. Call 1-800-273-TALK, 1-800-SUICIDE, right there and then. I'd rather you overreact than underreact. You know what I mean? Like,
yes,
call them
yeah.
already. Let them come get your kid.
Better to be safe than sorry. Yeah.
I remember at one point the CDC had created, they called it like a kind of a state of emergency, if you will. And it was about, it wasn't necessarily about bullying, but it was about violence in middle schools. And I'm wondering why the CDC hasn't considered this another movement where they come out and they really start, and the doctors, just like yourself, are coming up with ways and ideas of combating this problem across the United States.
So, Dr. Lulu, is
that... I think everything starts at home. I think everything starts at home. Charity begins at home. Everything starts at home. I think I need us parents to roll up our sleeves, hands-on with your own children. If every mother and every father talks to their kids every day, we're not going to have a bully. We're not going to have a bullied kid, and we're definitely not going to have a bystander. And have as many conversations as you need. Talk to them as many times as you need. And don't ever say, oh my God, we didn't know. A lot of children who end up ending their lives have left all kinds of clues. All kinds of clues. The most recent girl, the Australian girl, she wrote on Facebook, maybe when I'm gone, the bullying will stop. Her words. Only one person reached out to her, but a lot of people saw that.
Yeah.
So you don't tell me. You know what I mean? People know. I was like, well, it's not my child, or she's a Muslim, or she's black, or she has red hair. They find a reason to say, well, it's not really, it's none of my business. Who told you it's not your business? We're all members of the village that it takes to raise one child. It's all our business, collectively.
Right. I think Joe has a Facebook question for you.
Yes. So I was just going to ask you, on a long-term or a preventative measure, what can we do, what can we all do to prevent suicide?
I think, honestly, the most important thing is talk about it. I just believe in my life, in my heart, with my whole being, that if, for instance, Joe, if you were going to get pregnant, you wanted to have a baby, the first thing you do is talk to people who have had babies, right? Whatever it is that you want to do, you want to travel to Australia, you're going to say, who has been to Australia? Tell me about it. We don't want to talk about suicide. I'm a doctor. I'm a veteran. I'm a black woman. I'm LGBT. I'm all of these high-risk groups that are completing suicide left, right, and center. But none of them is talking about it. And because they're not talking about it, the silence is what's killing us. So if all of us can collectively today say, me too, in the sense of we're going to fight this suicide together, me too. Because that's what Mr. Anna Brooke did. She said, you know what, me too. She was talking to a 17-year-old who had been molested. She didn't know what else to say. She said, you know what, me too. I too was molested. If we stop saying, I've never been depressed, it's not my child, it doesn't really bother me, well, that's another one bites the dust. If we all collectively stop feeling that way, the person who is depressed will be happy to tell you that.
So in other words, we have to care. We have to care. And we just want to tell our listening. Yeah, we just want to tell our audience that we're speaking with Dr. Uchenna Ome, and she goes by the name Dr. Lulu. She's taking time out of her busy schedule to call us from Texas, and we're talking about depression and bullying and teen suicides, which seems to be climbing. And you're so right. I think as a mother, I know we're always so busy. You know, we have to get our kids to school, then after school activities, and we have to get them to bed. And a lot of families are not sitting down on the dinner table anymore and having those conversations. And I read once where all you could say to your child or your spouse is, how are you? Just three letters, and let the person talk. Because if you say, how are you? They will tell you exactly how they are, but you got to give them time to talk, and you have to listen. And I think we're not doing active listening anymore. I think that's the problem, doctor.
And I like to just jump in.
That's one of the problems.
And I like to jump in and just say, not only active listening, but observation. Because so many times they don't have the two-parent household, or they don't sit at the dinner table. But yet, when you go to school, or when you go to church, or when you go to the grocery store, you notice bruises. You notice certain things. And you notice when people are in depression. Because I know here in Brevard County, 4 years ago, was a young lady that was in middle school at Jackson. And she committed suicide, right. Hannah. And she killed herself. And it's like, we waited. We dropped the ball. The community dropped the ball. And I think what we have to do
and there
also
were tons of signs with her.
That you said, Dr. Lulu, is that it takes a village to raise a child. And you're right. We can't keep saying it's not my child. My kids are grown now.
Right.
I don't have anything.
And another
do.
One bites the dust. Or,
right.
You know, and it's a bad attitude. So why do you think so many people are committing suicide or attempting, Dr. Lulu?
Honestly, there are lots of reasons why people attempt suicide. There are lots of reasons. There's a lot of pressure, lots of pressure. I know everyone is quick to blame it on social media. Maybe to some extent for the teenage girls, there was a study that was done a few years ago that showed that there's an increased tendency to be depressed, yes, for teenage girls when it comes to social media. But there's more than that. There's pressure from within yourself. If you have mental illness, schizophrenia, depression, PTSD. I'm a veteran. PTSD. That's one of the big things when it comes to veterans. As you know, 22 veterans commit suicide every day. So PTSD is a big one. Outside pressures like bullying, what we're talking about, ostracization, like we're talking about, financial issues like bankruptcy, relationship issues like divorce, breakups,
debts. Or if you lose a spouse, you lose a spouse, you lose a child.
Yes, yes.
You lose a family member.
Terminal illnesses. Yeah, terminal illness, like, you know, cancer, you know you're not going to get better. And there's social issues like homelessness, drug abuse. There are other ills like discrimination, racism. That's a lot. That's racism is very bad. Anybody who's been discriminated upon, they don't want to live because it's like, what kind of life is it? Am I going to just go somewhere else where, you know, I'm not going to be dealing with this kind of pain.
Right.
And there's others like work-related. Doctors and nurses. Sita, you're a nurse.
Yeah, you know what? At the end of the day, doctor,
more than anybody.
Right, right. And, you know, at the end of the day, what I notice is every single human being wants to be loved and appreciated.
Yes, thank you.
People want to be loved and appreciated. And I think it starts at the top when you have people in leadership roles and leadership areas in our country, in our world, when they're using words that hurt, when they're saying things that are racist, when they're saying things that are against a certain religion or color or race or whatever. I mean, all of us at some point have to stop and think what we're doing, because the children are watching. And you, it's a very bad example to set for the children when adults do it. And we're seeing adults being bullied at work. We're seeing adults being bullied politically. We're seeing the LGBT community being bullied. We're seeing people who have forgotten that the earth doesn't belong to them. It belongs to all of us.
That's right.
You didn't. Nobody didn't die and leave you in charge of this magnificent planet. You're breathing and eating and sleeping and doing everything else just like everybody else. So what makes somebody think that they're better than someone else? And I think it's just their thoughts. If you change your behavior on Earth, you can change your behavior towards human beings, right?
Absolutely.
And that is so true. And with that, I want to say, so why do we see that so more men are committing suicides than women? I read this morning that it's, and now they're saying it's a middle-aged white man. Look out, because a lot of them are either using guns to hurt others or they're committing suicide. So why is that so?
I know that, so the term for that is actually the gender paradox of suicide. That's the term for that. And the paradox is women have more suicidal thoughts and they attempt suicide 3 times more than men, but men are 3 times more likely to complete suicide, even though they don't usually have suicidal thoughts. You know what I mean? Like, they are less likely to. So, however, for the women who have already completed suicide, 62% of them must have attempted before. Whereas for men, 62% of the men have not attempted before. They just kind of start and then they go with it. So the main thing is, I think the community, the society kind of expects men to be macho and strong, and that kind of plays into it. So they are more likely to pick violent, more fatal choices, like you mentioned, guns, asphyxiation, hanging, things like that, firearms. Whereas for women, the society kind of allows us to share our emotions a little bit more, you know, a little softer, maybe, if you want to call it that. So we're more likely to use poisons, like maybe just, I don't know, cyanide or, you know, whatever. Women tend to use softer things. However, they do mention that even though that is the pattern and that is the trend, women still use firearms. So don't think that, okay, well, she's not going to do it. No, my first friend that ever completed suicide, a doctor, 18 years ago, she put a gun to her head. And that was 18 years ago before anybody was talking about this. How do I know? She put me into labor. My middle son came 6 weeks early because of her. You know,
stress,
school, but that news threw me into labor. So she used the gun. So women use violent means,
methods.
Also.
Yeah. So who is at the highest risk, doctor, and why? I mean, because we know that children, their little mind, it's not formed yet. And whatever they're seeing, and it's like a book, you know, they're taken in like little sponges. Yeah. But for one of my questions, when I put it on my Facebook that you were coming on, somebody wanted to know who is at the highest risk and why.
I think the way the world is now, honestly, everyone is at high risk, including me. As I'm speaking to you, I have been depressed and I have been suicidal. It's a lover of no one, it's a respecter of no one. We have all got to look out for each other. However, in as much as we are all at risk, because think about it, 800,000 suicides are recorded each year. Recorded. So that means if it's reported, there are many, many, many more that are not reported. Every 40 seconds, someone is completing suicide. There's no way that number cannot be more, you know? So if you pick out everyone and then you want to go into that realm, then victims of bullying, as we've seen, with children especially, which is why we need to keep pushing this issue of, is your child the bully? enough of talking about the victims already, because the truth is, your child could be the bully, but in that little formula there, 15% of children are bullies, 15% of children are bullied, 70% of them are bystanders. Is your child the bystander? Have you had that conversation with your child? What would you do when someone is being bullied? Now, don't tell me what you think I want to hear. What would you really do? Because a lot of times, the majority of people are just watching, or they are videoing it on their devices.
Right. I was telling somebody at the gym, I said, you know, in the old days, back in Trinidad, you could discipline somebody's child like your own. And you didn't have to be worried about somebody coming to sue you or tell you off. Mm-hmm. I mean, I lived in a village where we had Hindu, Muslims, Christians, others, people with no religion. But if a kid was caught doing something, you could go up to that kid and stop him. And the parents would thank you for it. You. And you know what? The parents would give him a good whipping, and you would give him a whipping. But today, in this society, you can't do it. In this society, they want to sue you. I mean, they say, why did you talk to my child in that tone of voice? It's almost as though we say we're a global village, but in all actuality, some people don't have the mindset that it's okay to tell your kid, stop it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I know for me, I didn't even use the word stop it. I just called that little kid there and had a chit-chat with him. And then the next day, I saw his dad, and I had a talk, and I said, thank you so much for doing that, because, you know, every now and again, he tries to smell himself. And it's okay. I think you're right. We all have to be open to the fact that allow other people in, because your way cannot be the only way. And sometimes your way is the wrong way.
Right.
You know, so besides victims of bullying, victims of domestic abuse, there's of course, veterans, like I mentioned before, people in high-stress jobs, like doctors, anesthesiologists are very notorious, executives, they're also there. People with chronic diseases.
Pilots. How about the pilots? We all have seen. So, doctor, give us,
we want your
website, your blog, and congratulations on your book that's going to be published. You're doing so much, and you'll be coming back every month. So give us your website.
So my website is teenalive.com. So teen, T-E-E-N, alive. Because we want to raise and save one teen at a time. So teenalive.com. Then my blog is wordsbyblackbutterfly.com. Wordsbyblackbutterfly.com. And then, of course, I'm on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and wherever else. All the places that you spend your time, wasting your time at. I'm on all of those platforms. On Facebook, I'm there as myself, but I also have a team called Team Teen Alive, so they can always join. If you have kids, you can join. Please come and join us. We have like nice, lively discussions on there.
Thank you.
So that's also called Teen Alive. I'm trying to trademark that name. And then every Sunday, I have my Ask Dr. Lulu every Sunday at 2 p.m. So there's an Ask Dr. Lulu page. Just like it so you can get notifications. Otherwise, I'm going to be on here with Sita.
That's right. Every month, and we will make sure that we announce it. Thank you so much, Dr. Lulu, for calling in, and we will hear from you again and post all of your information. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
All right, I'll catch up with you on Facebook. Thank you so much.
Of course.
All right, dear. Bye-bye. Feel good. That was a great segment.
That was good. Yes.
I'm going to hold the ads because I want to give us the time to converse about what we wanted to talk about. So for the remainder of our program to hear on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, we're going to be speaking with Joe Shim and Sonia Millard and Ellen and I. We're going to have a frank discussion about HIV infections and AIDS and, of course, the treatment and what Project Response is doing here in town. And Joe just attended a conference, right? Is it a conference or you went to Tallahassee?
Oh, I haven't been to Tallahassee yet.
Okay, but we're going to be talking about legislative issues as well.
Yes.
We're planning to go. I know. I want to go for Tally
Days. I think I'm going to go.
So, Sonia, you... you sent me this beautiful message, and I was like, well, what is Project Response? And then I read about it, and I'm really amazed at all the good things they're doing here in town. So tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and about Project Response, and then we'll have Joe introduce herself as well.
Okay. Well, hello, everyone. I'm Sonia Millard, and I'm an employee of Project Response. But more importantly than that, Project Response was established in 1990, and it began as a grassroots volunteer agency that operated and shared an office. You know, they've been forever striving to meet their mission, and their mission is caring for our community, responding to the needs of those impacted by and infected with HIV and AIDS throughout the Space Coast and Treasure Coast communities.
Right. And you also have a show here at this station as well. So I want to give you the chance to plug your show in as well. This is what it's all about. Viewpoint with Sita and Friends is all about marketing and helping our sisters and brothers to excel in whatever they choose to do.
Absolutely. Well, no one is really talking about HIV and AIDS. And, you know, Project Response is located at 745 South Apollo Avenue in Melbourne. However, a lot of people just don't go to get tested. They don't want to talk about it. They keep their head in the sand. So we started a radio show Monday nights, right? And it's about HIV and AIDS awareness. So we add some music and some dialogue, and we have people calling in. So it's every Monday night.
Right here on the
correct,
station.
94.7. That's
right.
Correct.
And Joe, you and I met, gosh, so many times. We share same interests, common interests in so many things. But you're with the League of Women Voters, and you're retired now.
I'm retired.
So you're giving a lot of time to a community.
Well, yes, and I still think I'm working, but just not getting paid for it right
Yes. Yeah, and so for those of us, our listeners who are tuning in, we're going to talk a little bit about education and prevention, and why is it people feel such shame to come forward? And we're saying to our brothers and sisters who are infected with HIV, and that could go into full-blown AIDS, we want to help them, and we want to send them to the right places so they can live a life, a fulfilled life, right?
Yeah.
So, Joe, tell us a little bit about what you found out about the legislative part of what's happening.
Okay, so right now there's actually two bills out there that are very, I think, going to be very helpful. So one of them is just, it's actually entitled Infectious Disease Elimination Program, but it's actually been introduced by one of our representatives in Brevard, Coach P. Palencia, and it actually will get, if it's taken up and adopted by the legislature, it will make sure that we have needle exchanges in many parts of Florida. Right now, there's a pilot program in Miami-Dade. It's been very, very successful, but a needle exchange problem would really help to prevent HIV, hepatitis C, anything that can be, and hepatitis B, any disease that can be spread by blood-to-blood transmission. And what's happening right now is the opioid epidemic is, you know, actually just running rampant in locally in Brevard and Orange County. And one of the, if you're addicted, you know, that's another disease. It's a public health issue. But just being able to get clean needles and not sharing needles will really help prevent those diseases that can be spread by blood-to-blood transmission. And I think this is so important. It's just a very good public health initiative. So if you see any of your legislators, we hope that you will tell them that you want to support House Bill 171, which will make sure that we have needle exchange programs all over Florida.
Right, and we all know that HIV isn't spread through casual contact. You cannot get it by shaking people's hands, hugging, sharing a restroom, equipment, food utensils. You can get it, however, by bodily fluids.
Yes.
Right, and by blood. And so I think people need to first understand the disease. So Sonia, tell us a little bit. How can we improve HIV and STI awareness in Brevard County? I mean, it's all about education, right? But people kind of have dropped the ball a little bit. They're not paying attention. How can we get them? Go ahead, Joe.
I just want to say STI is sexually transmitted infection.
That's right, right, right. and yeah, and also people with HIV not necessarily means they have AIDS.
That's
they're
correct.
Carrying the virus, but they
That's
don't have
correct.
The full-blown diseases yet. So we want to clarify that as well, because people associate the two and think it's the same, and that's not so.
No.
Right.
So let's be very clear. HIV is the human amino deficiency virus, right?
Mm-hmm.
AIDS is when you have T cells of 250 or below in an opportunist infection. So it's different stages of the disease. And your question, Sita, was?
Like, how can we bring more awareness to Brevard County about HIV and STIs, you know,
and how
sexually transmitted diseases.
And how we do that is by having a conversation like we have in a day.
Right.
Many people here in town don't want to talk about it. Everybody want to stick their heads in the sand and act like HIV is not knocking on their door.
But or you that know, was an 80s disease.
Correct.
Right?
Or 1 out of 5 don't know their status, right?
Right.
And it's so important for us to understand that you can get tested. And I think a lot of people don't even know where to get tested, nor do they want to speak to their private doctors or say, hey, you know, I'm a little risky. I didn't have protected sex. I've done some things over the weekend and partied hard. And, you know, they feel this stigma that's so attached. And that's what they have to know. They have to know that Project Response is right there, 745 South Apollo Avenue. You can walk in. You don't even have to make an appointment. They have great case managers. They have testers on site. And also what I'm proud to say is that they also have now a STI clinic right next door, you know. So if somebody feel that they have, you know, any STI, they can go right there as well.
But there's other places you can go. You can actually go to the Department of Health or the Department of Health's in Brevard. I believe all of them will either do anonymous testing where they don't have any information about you, or they do and everywhere there's confidential testing. So your results cannot be shared. The information about you will not be, you know, given out to anybody else.
Or you could even go to Planned Parenthood and you can check there as well.
Correct.
You can go to the Empire Pharmacy in Cocoa.
And that's us, Project Response. They're doing testing on Wednesdays.
The sad thing is that the layperson thinks that the epidemic doesn't affect them, but it affects people of all ages, races, sexual preferences. And according, in 2007, a statistic was back then from the CDC said that the largest group of people with HIV and AIDS are men who've had sex with men. But that's changed.
That's only in the U.S.
It's changed now. I mean, I think anyone who meets someone in a bar or in a church or anywhere you meet someone, that's a potential for you to pick something up. Ask the question. Ask people, where have you been? Who you've slept with? Do you have an STI? Do you have a condom?
Protect yourself.
Don't just leave blindly without somebody having the umbrella with them. Or with some sort of, you know, some sort of
protection.
Because, you know, oftentimes you'll hear people that say, I went out, like you said, you know, on a Friday night and I had a great time. If you value your life and the life of your children or those around you, you will ask those important questions. Do you have an umbrella in your wallet? Right. You know what I mean? A condom.
And I want to
say, you know, you have to.
I just want to say, I think there is some complacency because now we're quite successful at treating HIV. But I just want to say that not everybody that gets treatment is actually going to survive for a long time. I've known that actually in my own family, a family member was diagnosed with HIV and then died 5 years afterwards. So it's, although many people do very well on the medication, you may not just do as well. And then also it's not a disease that anybody wants to get because there's still no cure and we have no vaccine.
And so how much does it cost to treat someone with HIV? Because I know I've given the trio out as a nurse. I've given the pills out to the patients of mine in the past. And it is a handful of pills. It really is. And you have to be very serious and disciplined about the drug regimen. So do we know how much it costs from either Sonia or Joe?
Well, it varies. So it's very expensive in the United States because we don't have relationships with our drug companies, so they're giving us a break. So for the average patient, it's about between $14,000 and $20,000 a year for all their treatments. So that would be the drugs, which are usually about $1,000 a month. And then, of course, there's testing, there's doctor visits, there may be nutritional therapy, there may be other
somewhere to live. I mean, a lot of them are so ill they can't work too, you know.
A lot of people are going back to work, but
stigma.
There is still, yes.
And that's where we want to talk about the stigma and the shame.
So
because,
Sita,
Sonia, how do we get people to assess and take responsibility for their behavior and educate others so we don't have a stigma and a shame?
Well, stigma starts with people just naturally. We have stigmas about so many different things. But I just want to correct one thing. I want to make sure that we're very clear today. HIV is no longer a death sentence.
Yeah, that's right.
It's not a death sentence. It's a life sentence, but it's not a death sentence. Right. I know many of
people. We've come a long way, girl.
Who have been living with HIV and AIDS for over 30 years.
Yeah, but Magic Johnson has good money to afford his meds.
All I'm saying is that he's living.
Yeah, he is.
He's living.
But you know, we do have to address the cost of it as well.
Absolutely.
Not everyone have access to the drugs that Magic Johnson had, but we want people to have the access to it.
I want to make sure we're clear. Project Response, we still work to prevent further spread of the disease.
Right.
We reduce the fear and ignorance and discrimination surrounding AIDS. And to increase community support and compassion for those affected by AIDS. You know, it's so important to understand that building upon a foundation of quality case management, we strive to open all available avenues to improve health. So how do we do this? Again, by conversation. And not only that, we have to get it out there. So Project Response have educational people in the area. I know a guy named Guy, myself, and some others go out and we educate. So for people to learn and turn from their ways, we can't change people, but we can educate people.
That's right.
We have to give them the knowledge. And we do this by our pamphlets.
You're preaching this. Knowledge is power.
Knowledge is power.
But you know, I want to know a little bit about something about Project Response. So it was started in 1990.
Correct.
Do we know who started it and how did it come about?
Well, it was a grassroots volunteer agency that operated from a shared office. It was the lifeline for people living with HIV and AIDS on the Space Coast. I'm not sure exactly who started it, but I know Chris Hackford is our director right now, and she's been with them a long time. I think almost as long as the agency was open, if not a few years.
And it's funded through the Ryan White Care Act.
Correct.
Which is
United
good.
Way, right, some right. other funding mm-hmm. through grants.
Florida Medicaid, housing
Correct.
Opportunities for people with AIDS, Florida Department of Health, United Way of Brevard. And Joe, what else can we be doing? I mean, we talk at the League of Women Voters, you and I on the healthcare committee, and we talk about reproductive rights, and we talk about HIV and AIDS prevention and cures and whatever. There is no cure, but like Sonia said, well, people can live with it,
yeah, people
take their
can
medication.
Live,
and
it's not a dead certainty. Which
no,
right,
not at all.
Right,
yes.
right, right,
not
right.
At all.
So what else can we do? What other programs are there in the community to help? Like, personally, I think everyone in middle school and high school should have an education about this. It's about being safe with this beautiful body, this temple that
right.
we have. How else can we get that education out there?
I think that comprehensive sex education is really important. And that we all need to work on that, because we have a little subcommittee right now and we're just trying to explore exactly what is being taught in middle school and high school. So I think that's something we're working on, but I think it's very important that we have sex education that covers everything. And the abstinence is important, but we need to talk about other choices as well, because I think it's very important that our younger people have the right information going out into the community. And we know that there's now a spike of chlamydia and gonorrhea cases in the 16 to 25 year old age group, and so that's telling us a lot.
Right. And you know, we could say, you know, in reality we can all say, okay, be responsible with your behaviors, be responsible with your reproductive organs, with your bodies, but in reality people don't listen. So they need to be informed. They need to make well-informed decisions about what they're going to be doing.
Yes.
And the only way to do that is to educate.
Right.
Absolutely.
And a lot of people are even against education. Not yep. everybody have an aunt and a grandma and a cousin and this
Correct.
And that to sit down and talk to them, right? So, Sonia, that's where you come in handy. You have a loud, booming voice, which is great. And it's assertive, and I like it. And I think I love having you with Project Response, helping them with HIV counseling and testing and linkage to, you know, affordable housing and everything else. What else are you doing in the community to get people to listen to you?
Well, I'm knocking on the church doors. I'm going to the schools to speak to the children. We do a lot of organizational work. And now I've started something new. I go right into our parks, into our county parks, our city parks, where people congregate. Not just people, but I'm talking about homeless people, drug-infested yeah. people who people don't normally want to stop and talk to, because A, they're having sex in the bathrooms, B, they're not using protection, and C, most people don't want to stop and talk to them. It's important that we go to these clubs and put condoms inside the bathrooms. It's important that we utilize our local beauty shops and barbershops and put condoms inside the shops. free condoms,
and
I might
start the conversations.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So sometimes I even go to the barbershop and sit there, because how do you get into a conversation with men, right? You go to the basketball court, you go on the tennis court, or you go in the barbershop. And that's what we've been doing at Project Response. We've been going to the places. It's almost like the highway and the byways. We're going into the places that most people don't want to go. It's not pretty. It's not nice. It's not clean. But we roll up our sleeves, and we have to go, because in order to save our community in this world, we have to do the unthinkable, right?
Yes, yes, yes. And the thing is, it is growing. The epidemic is growing. It's just that people are not talking about it. And I, you know, this is why I think when I spoke to Joe and she said this would be a good conversation to have, I was listening to NPR and they were talking about the high rates of HIV and AIDS in Orlando. And yes. What do we have in Orlando? Disney World, hotels, tourists, people coming in, people going. And if people are not starting the conversation, they are going to sleep with somebody there. I mean, let's be honest, the flesh is weak.
Yes.
We all know that
yes.
from the Bible,
yes.
from the Garden of, what is it, Eden and Adam and Eve
we
and all that.
We have to be realistic.
I mean, in Trinidad, they used to say, well, you know, God made Adam and Eve. He didn't make Steve and Steve, or Adam and Steve.
Right.
But that's all well and good. But in reality, this stuff is happening.
In our reality today is that, you know, look at our communities. Look at our lifestyles. It has changed so much. People don't go home to just a father and a mother anymore. Sometimes they go home to two fathers or two mothers. Mm-hmm. And that's what society has come to now. But we still have to have that conversation. We still have to have safe sex. And we still have to protect not only ourselves, but be responsible.
And what do you say to the people who bury their heads in the sand and say, well, you know, the good Lord will take care of that. I go to church. I'm a good person. My family is good. We all know that some of them need to help themselves.
It's not a judgment.
Right.
We're not here to judge. We're not God.
Right.
We're not judging anybody.
Amen.
But what we want to do is educate people.
Right.
It's not a matter how good you are. It's a matter how safe you are.
How educated you
yeah.
are.
And how educated you are.
And it's a public health issue.
Right.
Absolutely.
So Sonia, give us the website for Project Response. Well, yeah, I guess they could just Google Project Response and put in Apollo Boulevard, and it comes right up, right?
It's just Project Response.
Project Response, yeah. Project
Correct.
Response. And I do like all the things that they're doing. I mean, they're really going all out to help people who are infected with things like HIV counseling, testing. I'm helping with financial assisted food pantry services,
Correct.
Insurance continuation. And Joe, thank you for coming on the show and telling us what's happening legislatively as well. And give us the website for the League of Women Voters so more people could join the healthcare committee and all the great things we are doing.
Okay, it's LWV spacecoast.org.
Right, and everything is on Facebook. Everybody
yep.
has a group that you could link up with. So, Sonia, I'll have to bring you back. I think it'd be fun to have you back when Dr. Lulu come on you.
And make sure you check out our Facebook page under CETA Media, Inc. And, of course, CETA always keeps her page up, CETABegee.com, CETABegee. And we will be back next week with another great show.